It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running live for this 22nd day of January 2018. It is, yes, Moran Monday on the horn. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we're 22 days into the brand new year. It was a government shutdown, then it's not a government shutdown. It was Schumer's fault. It was Trump's fault. It was Mitch McConnell's fault. Curiously, nobody was saying that it was the Freedom Caucus's fault over there in the wild and untamed place that used to be known as the House of Representatives. Sorry, I had to do a little mic adjusting there. And so here we are. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know both streams are up and running. Much obliged. And we've got plenty of Morans today, believe you me. So, that being the case, let's do what we take care of at the beginning of the program, namely, and to wit, send out thanks to those who help keep the program on the air. Those who are, in fact, you know, if everybody was selling something, those who would be sponsors of the program. And who, as it is, are sustainers of the program. So, let's check in, go back a couple of days, catch up with the subscribers. And that would mean going back to the 20th of January and sending out thanks to our pal Bernice. Thank you, Bernice, for being a continuing, sustaining supporter of the program, and as well as thanks to our buddy Carl, there in Columbus. Thank you, Carl and Bernice, and thank you very kindly to David in Vermont. Thank you, David. Thanks to Joan in Tallahassee. Thank you, Joan. You know, thanks to everybody in during the program and not during the program who keeps all of this going. It remains a constant it remains a constant source of amazement and inspiration that we've been able to do this for this long. Let's see. Thanks to Peggy in the sandbox. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you to Felicia in Nebraska. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Michael. Thank you, Michael. And to Bill in Florida. Thank you, Bill, very, very much. And thanks to Kenda out in Missouri. Thank you to Jamie. Thank you very much indeed. And so those are the subscribers over the course of the weekend. And we are getting very, very close, and I'm excited to say it, to the fundraising free portion of this program. And that will begin on Thursday. And so we will have 5 days. I sat down over the weekend and added up all the subscriptions, all the Patreon, and we will have Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The final days of the month of January, and they'll be fundraising free. Isn't that wonderful? I'm looking forward to it. I can tell you that without a doubt. Now, this evening we'll try to raise $200, and if we get there, then hallelujah, glory! We'll be that much closer to finishing the month. So, cross your fingers. Let's see, answering a bunch of questions here. All right, so that's taken care of. Now, as far as the program goes for the evening. What a strange day. Not that I'm complaining, but this 22nd day of January finds me sitting in a 70 degree studio. And that's not, no heat is running, no propane being burned. That's always a bonus. But yeah, we got up to 60 degrees outside today, and that meant getting up to about 70, 72 degrees here inside the studio. Isn't that bizarre? And it's only third week of January. So what? I mean, if you think it, I was talking with Agnes earlier today, and I said, it helps me to think, okay, so third week of January is roughly the same as the third week of July. So it's 60 degrees in the third week of January. That means that it would be not at all unusual in the third week of July to have a day that was 40. Only we don't have those. So I'm guessing that does mean that the planet is warming. I saw an interesting statistic the other day that said that if you were born after 1970-something, you have never lived a day on a planet that was not getting hotter. Think about that. And see, this is that's without regard to whether the birchers, baggers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, maggots, Republicans, deniers of the reality of science, or the planet doesn't care what those oafs believe. Those oafs are, of course, morons. It's going to go on and do what it does. But it was still kind of sobering when I realized that for me and the people who were born oh, say, 10 years, maybe 15 years after me. They've never known a year in which the planet has been cooler than average. I mean, I actually sat and contemplated my navel for a little bit about that. And when you take into account my kids, or you take into account our grandkids, it becomes doubly so. Especially in the case of my grandkids, because it becomes a matter of they've never known a day on that they weren't on a warming planet, and of course they've never known a day when their country was not involved in some sort of bullshit warfare somewhere on the globe. Interesting world we're getting ready to hand over to them, isn't it? I said 22nd degree, and Anatole in the chat, 22nd degree super cyan. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry, I'm checking a couple of things. That's kind of just the stuff that's been bouncing around my noggin as I've watched it. My God, I had real hopes watching the House and Senate over the weekend. I did. For a little bit there, I thought that over in the House that they were gonna they were gonna get out the hockey sticks and go at it. And I think it would have been fun. Yeah, the hypocrisy was on display, coming from the Republican Party. And oh, the Democrat, the Schumer shutdown. They're holding the poor little children's health insurance hostage for a bunch of goddamn illegal aliens. And for the most part, on the for-profit media, they got away with saying that kind of shit. But no, they got away with saying it. It wasn't true. If there was a God in heaven, you know, the one that so many of those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians believe in, if that critter was real, there probably wouldn't be a Republican left alive in either the House or Senate, because it would have just rained lightning bolts every time they opened their mouths and said something about Chuck Schumer, because, of course, and I don't want to put too fine a point on this or anything, but holy mackerel. You know, it's not like the Children's Health Insurance Program expiration snuck up on these stupid bastards. No. No. They knew years ago that it was going to expire on September the 30th. And so they had a lovely summer of 2017. And they frolicked in the DC sunshine. And they gathered their rosebuds while they might. And September the 30th came and went, and they had not reauthorized the CHIP program. And along came October 31st, and still nothing. And November the 30th and December the 31st, nothing. And governors of states all across the country were saying, we're running out, we're unning Ray out of unning May for the Ipsche O'Gram Prey. And a lot of those governors were Republicans. And still McConnell fiddled about and fumbled about looking for his chin. And Paul Ryan tried to stay hidden underneath his desk, lest the barbarians from the Feedum Caucus find him and say mean things to him about how he doesn't love Jesus or something. And there we are. But no. They're digging around in the White House, even as we speak, for Donald Trump's special bill signing crayon. And meanwhile, inside his own skull, the spirochetes are asking amongst each other as to which one of them still knows how to make his hand write a signature. And the House of Representatives has passed the same bill that the Senate passed to get the government back open, with a promise that, no, really, this time, honest to goodness, no kidding, we'll take up the issue of DACA, we promise. And a whole bunch of other issues like funding FEMA enough to continue to really pay for recovery from Hurricanes Irma and Maria. We will, we promise. No fooling. You believe us, don't you? Sure you do. Yeah. So, at any rate, the government will remain open until the 8th of February, which is, of course, of itself pathetic. Greatest country in the world can't fund itself for more than a couple of weeks. And remember, this all falls back, you know, it's Schumer's fault, it's Trump's fault, it's floor wax, it's a dessert topping. It's McConnell's fault. Funny how they left out the entire House of Representatives, and more particularly the Freedom Caucus. Because that little cancerous knot of weirdos and hallucinators and religious zealots and people whose brains have been sublet to the NRA, what such as brains as they have, they're the ones who put together a bill that didn't have DACA in it in the first place. They're the ones who put together a bill that didn't have CHIP in it in the first place. And there was very little talk about that. Yeah. But that's where the program begins, this 22nd day of January 2018, and I don't think I would have made it this far if it weren't for Persnickety Parsley. That's right, from the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. I received delivery today of our first test batch of our new bullshit nutritional supplement, Persnickety Parsley. Yes, yes, yes. I tell you what, I couldn't have made it this far without Persnickety Parsley. I took a little handful of them, and, well, I believed that it would perk me up, and in fact, it did perk me up and gave me the pep and the zing and the verve and the drive to get us all the way to 19 minutes, almost 20, into the program. Like all Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, products, Persnickety Parsley is all natural, GMO-free, a proprietary blend of vegan, cage-free, free-range, cruelty-free, gluten-free parsley grown under only the most exacting conditions, harvested by hand, dried, crushed, ground, and put into powder form. You know, I've been seeing it on plates at bad restaurants for years as a garnish, and I can tell you I never really cared much for parsley. But now, thanks to Persnickety Parsley from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, golly gee, I can make sure that I've got my recommended daily allowance of parsley in my diet every day. So act now. Persnickety Parsley is not that pricey. You can get a 3-month supply of Persnickety Parsley for only $69.69. And if you act now, well, we'll send you a little bundle of test strips so that you can find out in the comfort and privacy and joy of your own home, clothed or unclothed, what we already know here at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, and that is that Persnickety Parsley has absolutely no nutritional benefit whatsoever. It won't do a damn thing for you. And that way, we know it, we're not hurting you. But if you believe in it, and if you think it'll help you to fly, well, never mind, don't think it'll help you. Just don't do that. But no, because you see, you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness, professional radio program unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the credulous who happen to walk into the fringes of the broadcast. Persnickety Parsley, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs. Call now. Don't call now. Operators are not standing by. It's not a free call. Persnickety Parsley. Accept no substitutes. Post no bills. Use no hooks. This side up. FOB. COD. ONTHE. PLATE. ATSHONEYS. Persnickety Parsley. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes. Yes, indeed. And, of course, it is being the 22nd day of the month. Well, let's check in for what we like to call This Day in Horn History. Shall we? For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Vox holographic time machine 8 years into the past, all the way back to January 22nd, 2010. It's Friday on the front porch, and Bob opens the program telling the audience that he attended a debate the night before between cartoon coal villain Don Blankenship and Bobby Kennedy Jr. As a member of the live audience, Bob says he started clutching the wall and tearing at his hair when he heard Blankenship accuse Kennedy of being born in Massachusetts. Hey, he's up there born in Massachusetts. Because that's the way we say it down here, Massachusetts. I think it's a Civil War thing. Still mad at him. Bobby Kennedy Jr. is obviously born New York, Bob explains. After spending 30 seconds or so on the electric Google machine, one can quickly find out that Bobby Kennedy Jr. is actually born in Washington, D.C. At one point during the debate, which is centered on the future of energy, Bobby Jr. accuses Blankenship of leaving behind ghost towns all over West Virginia in the wake of his mountaintop removal escapades, to which Blankenship responds, "Those people left voluntarily." It was like being in a strip joint, Bob says, about his experience being among the live audience. You had to sit on your hands, couldn't hoot, couldn't boo, couldn't yell or scream, and when you're sitting there being told if you don't love coal, you don't love Jesus, not screaming is a real challenge. Next up is the news of the demise of Air America Radio. Ed Schultz, reported to have gone after Mike Malloy, blaming him for the demise of the radio network. "Ed, you're not fit to carry Mike Malloy's soiled underwear," Bob observes. Liberal, parenthetically liberal, radio and TV host Ed Schultz, as you might be aware, turned out to be an outspoken supporter of the Clementine Caligula during the 2016 elections. Bob puts out an open invitation to all Air America audience and then lets them know that they will always have a home in the Horn. Appropriately, Bob goes into the first break playing Elton John's I'm Still Standing. Yep. Later in conversation with longtime friend of the program, Sandra, Bob predicts as follows. Republicans will do anything to stall Obama up to and including denying him a Supreme Court nominee. I said that, you know. It wasn't until 2,245 days later that Bob's prognosis comes to pass. On March 16, 2016, Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Merrick Garland, was refused a vote in the United States Senate, a phenomenon which continued until President Obama's second term came to its conclusion. And that's a look back, 8 years into the past, all the way to January 22, 2010, for This Day in Horn History. I love these things. How about that? I actually predicted. You know, if this keeps up, I'm going to have to actually order the purple robe with the frayed, tattered appliqued moon and stars and Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark Baby written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front and get myself an actual eight ball, magic eight ball, and I'll have to physically go to the trouble of cracking the screen right when it says answer hazy, ask again later. Yeah, so let's check in with the mailbag such as it is up until this moment. By the way, Steve letting me know, your inner Celsius, 22 degrees Celsius, is 72 Fahrenheit. Ah, so it's 22 on the 22nd. Awfully damned ominous. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky pointing out, warmer than average. I forget the name of the film or TV program that featured it, but I recall one that included scenes of the atmosphere ablaze. Climate change deniers will have some lame explanation for that development, too, when it eventually happens. Of course they will, Scott and Punky.
Well, our atmosphere wouldn't be on fire if that Kenyan muslin you slurper hadn't put a Kenyan muslin you slurping time bomb in it back there in about 2013 or so and triggered it to go off right when we was making America great again.
Steve, meanwhile, adds, just had a sinister thought. Wouldn't it just be great if Trump vetoed the funding bill? What an exclamation point on the end of the statement. We can't govern. You know, I actually thought for a minute there, considering how he's been, how erratic his behavior has been, wouldn't it be funny if he threw a tantrum and refused to sign the bill? Maybe, you know, until... Well, who knows what kind of ransom demand there would be. But you get the idea. Yes, that's right, Randy in PA. Persnickety parsley. Well, I almost made them parsnips. Persnickety parsley even freshens your breath, but you have to break the capsules open then, and that violates the terms of our TOS. And also helps you to find out that, well, there's no real parsley in it. So there's that, too. And then also a note from our buddy Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, it seems odd. Seems a little odd to me, what with the stock market going like a house afire, fluctuating around 26,000, and the unemployment rate at 4.1%, which was once considered to be zero unemployment. The Republicans forced this tax scam, saying that it will kick off massive growth. I'll note editorially that when you have massive growth during a state in which you are ostensibly in good health, that's when they send you over to the fancy-sounding doctor whose specialty is actually terrifying, called oncology, because that doctor is a cancer doctor, because that means your unrestrained growth has turned into various and sundry forms of, like, you know, tumors and shit. But Ron's assessment of the situation is correct. The Republicans, it seems to me, with the aforementioned numbers, where's the growth going to come from? Seems to be a disconnect from these so-called economic indicators and what's really happening. Growth in the economy has been around 2% for quite some time, regardless of stock market and unemployment numbers. So how are massive corporate tax cuts going to do anything other than cram more money into the pockets of shareholders and CEOs? Seems to me that the only path to growth is to increase the income of the poor and middle class. Let me know if I'm on the correct path. Well, you're on the correct path. It's just that it's not a path that makes our betters particularly happy. The whole thing was a sham. And if you take, for instance, if you take the DACA discussion and add to that the general lack of coherent immigration policy which this country has. Do you remember many years ago? Talk about a moron. You remember many years ago when Marco Rubio put together a comprehensive immigration package, and then the booger eaters and birchers and birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and what have you all banded together to call him mean names? And so he ran away from his own common-sense immigration plan and wouldn't vote for it when it came right down to it. Remember that? I do. That's because this country is being run, and the sooner we come to this realization, the better off we'll be. This country is being run by the hardcore Klansmen and neo-Nazis and skinheads and bigots and xenophobes and sexually hung-up weirdos and good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual, Christian evangelicals. That's who's running the country. This country, whether we realize it or not, has been turned on its freaking head. So that, you know, here we stand on our heads, letting the patients run the asylum. If you're really going to turn that corporate, if you're really going to try to turn up the heat on the economy, and I don't know how you could really do that considering where the stock market is, without, you know, sort of reducing the, well, just making it an inferno, which will rapidly burn itself out. You're going to need somebody to do that work. And the somebodies to do that work are going to have to come from somewhere else. And newsflash, it ain't Norway. So maybe there is something tucked away in all of this, that ultimately there's a plan to bring in guest workers as long as they're not paid a living wage. Because as Ron points out, the only path to growth is to increase the income of the poor and middle class, because they're the ones who spend the money. The working class spends the money. The working class buys the bulk of the cars. The working class buys most of the stoves and washing machines and sofas and end tables and love seats and coffee tables and bookshelves and mattresses made of foam developed by NASA and perfected by
by Swedish industrial architects and Bose Wave radios and General Steel buildings and which jungle did it come from wood floors. That's who buys all that crap. That's who buys all that stuff. I mean, I thought poor Stephanie Ruhle was going to, in a conversation with that right wing schmuck that the New York Times brought onto its editorial page, Brett Stevens. I thought she was going to have some sort of sexual rapture on screen talking about the $274 million bajillion trillion that Apple's going to repatriate into the United States now because Trump. And since it is more in Monday, yes, Brett Stevens felt like lecturing the rest of us, telling us that, that there's plenty wrong with Trump, but he'll get in his own way. But when he gets something right, don't sit there because the middle class is going to say, hey, I've got 79 cents more every doggone month, every ding-dang month in my payday, and hoo-wee, that Trump done gibbed it to me. Yeah. So I don't think you're on the wrong path, Ron. We're just having a hard time. It was a big wet sloppy from the Republican Party to the corporate base. And by the way, yes, people are having to recalculate their withholdings to make sure that they're not going to wind up owing a ton of money next year when they file their taxes. It's a mess. Yeah, meanwhile, we're still waiting for the Carotene Caligula to sign the bill. Apparently, they sent it by word by word by semaphore from the Capitol to the White House. Yeah. I don't pull together this day in horn history. Scott wants to know, please refresh my memory. What was the basis for Ed Schultz's claim that Mike Malloy was responsible for the demise of Air America Radio? As I recall, it actually fell apart due to underfunding and general mismanagement. Well, you hemorrhage $80,000 a day and see how long you last. That was a big part of it, and there were other bizarre... But I actually remember the program that Asa went to for this day in Horn history. And I do remember when Ed Schultz made that claim. Is anybody out there still talking about Ed Schultz? Apart from pointing out that he turned into a Trumpansy in 2016? Meanwhile, note coming in from Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, talking about the issue that Ron brought up. That's the same argument I have with my brain-dead white-wing relatives. If no one has any money, no one will buy shit, so there's no reason to hire people to make shit. I underestimated their stupidity. Well, you can never go broke doing that, or at least that's how the saying goes. But it was a weird little weekend. I ruined the corner of the bedstead, kicking it. Damn near broke a toe. The shoes are going to have to go off to the cobblers for repair. Because I just happened to be tuned in to MSNBC as Alex Witt was on the air on Saturday. When someone a booker who apparently couldn't get a totally sauced wino to come on the program, and therefore had to fall back on Franklin Graham.
Franklin.
Who came on the air to discuss the Schumer shutdown and make sure that we understood that all Democrats are possessed by demons, and when Alex Witt tried to turn the conversation toward the excesses of Donald Trump, well, that's when I got in trouble with the furniture and the footwear. Because she said, well, Dr. Graham, I just had, you know, we've talked about the economy and the shutdown and everything, but I just have to ask you, since I've got you here, what about this business with Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, the porn star, and the affair that he had with her? And then she asked a question and just shut up. I mean,
Franklin
went on to explain that, well, he denies he did. He denies that he had a relationship with that woman, Miss Stormy Daniels.
That woman, Miss Daniels.
He denied, and so I'm not in a position to judge him for that. And that's not an actual impression of his voice, but it ain't far off. So you, yeah. And he said, consequently, I can't tell you what it is that he did or didn't do. And Alex Witt responded and said, well, that's mighty forgiving of you. Do you suppose you would be as forgiving if we were talking about this in regard to a Democrat? And this is, again, this is where the footwear met the bedstead. There was furniture kicking involved. Because he responded, well, all presidents are sinners, and we are all sinners. And you know, I pray for them. I prayed for Obama too.
And that was the moment.
Agnes done come a running halfway through the house because she thought I was going to have a conniption or go into the fantods or something, or my lumbago was acting up because I hooted like a barn owl. Woo! And that's when I tried to place kick the leg of the bedstead through the imaginary uprights of the bedroom window. Because he really did. He did that. Franklin Graham, man o' God, upon being queried whether he would be so forgiving of a Democrat who had a nearly year-long affair with a porn star and sex worker, Franklin Graham said, but Obama. I still want to hoot. Okay, there. It's a little better.
as if somewhere along the way, Barack Obama had had a months-long affair with a porn star immediately. Ooh, if it was a white lady porn star, ooh. Well, I don't care what kind of porn star it was. The bottom line is that the Secret Service would have had to pick up what was left of Barack Obama with a stick and a spoon after Michelle got done with him if he had done anything like that. And you just sit there and you ask yourself, why do they bring these charlatans on to say this kind of treacly bullshit? Is it because it's good for a rise out of the liberals and progressives and what and centrists and establishment shills and sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry brigade members who tune in because that's about the only thing there is that time of the morning? I honest to God don't know. Usually there's a capitalist angle to it when you get down to the bottom of it, but it's hard to say. But that one was hard to stomach. And since we're talking about morons, well, that seems more than appropriate. But then, in another manifestation of sort of this day in horn history, it just so happened that I ran across an essay I had written a year before to mark the inauguration of the pustulant pumpkin. It was accompanied by that well-known photo now of Melania sitting there looking grim next to Donald, who was looking like he was waiting for somebody to bring him a live chicken from whose head he could bite off. And what sort of blew my mind was the language that I had used a year before. It was downright prescient. I wrote a year ago with no foreknowledge whatsoever, except whatever it is that happens when I put on the purple robe with the frayed purple robe with the tattered moons and stars and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" written across the front and glow in the dark paint. I wrote, Donald Trump cheated on his first wife, Ivana, with Marla. He cheated on Marla with melanoma. She knows she is not in a monogamous relationship. She knows if his voters knew what she knows, they would be disgusted, because she is. What you see in the photograph is a woman who knows better than anyone on the planet that her husband hired Russian prostitutes. She's educated. She speaks six languages and may well have called him an unfaithful, philandering whoremonger in every one of them. She knows better than anyone else in the world, except perhaps his first two wives, what a disaster has befallen her adopted country. I nailed it. Except for one part. The part where I wrote, she knows if his voters knew what she knows, they would be disgusted.
And maybe that's the most important part. This guy could hire every prostitute in Washington, Philly, Boston, D.C., I said Washington, New York, Charlotte, Atlanta, Chicago, and every other great city in the United States to form up like the Rockettes and go pee-pee for him while he watched. And the Trumpansies, the maggots, would be standing there, and the guys would say, "Hoo-wee, if I ever get to be that rich, I'm going to hire prostitutes to go pee-pee for me. Ah, he's making America great again." And the Trumpansy women would say, "Hoo-wee." Well, I just wish I was right there able to go pee-pee for Donald Trump for him, just with all them other women's, because that's how we're going to make America great again. Praise Jesus. James is apparently in agreement. Come on, Bob. There would have been four women swinging 8 feet kicking the shit out of Obama for doing something like that. And then the impeachment proceedings would have opened. "I can't believe we have allowed a Negro in the White House in the first place, but now to find out that he's out there a-stooping our fine, fine white prostitutes, it's a step too far, and the flag is falling," and Flush Flimball would be on the radio all a-hollering, my friends, words mean things, and we knew what a degenerate he was, my friends, when he was not elected to the presidency and used his Kenyan Muslim usurper powers to get into the seat that a great patriot like John McCain and a brilliant a woman like Sarah Palin so obviously won and deserved, my friends. But it was a little surprising to me, too, to read those words. From as far back as a year ago. But here's the bottom line as we approach the end of the filibobster. Well, that's true. Unlike Jesus, that's true indeed. Bullshitting is what they do. Yeah. We're a year in. It feels like this should be the fourth and final year. As a conversation I had off air with our buddy Steve in New York, the exhaustion is real. And it becomes a bit of a challenge. I mean, and again, as I've said before, that's part of why we have the fun little silly little things here that we have to try to take a little bit of the strain off the situation. Because this country is in both a constitutional and an existential crisis. To a certain extent, that crisis extends to the world. I had when I was talking about the warmth of the day here, I had a note from Devin. Hi, Devin. "Today I saw dandelions in bloom. It's 68 degrees Fahrenheit in Barber County, West Virginia, in January." Yeah, bear in mind, after a week and a half before being zero overnight. Yeah,
The low tonight probably won't get below 45. I mean, I'm grateful for not having to burn a bunch of propane and kerosene and whatnot. But still. And that's part of the existential crisis. But as we've seen, I mean, if the notion that we can't manage to run the government more than 3 weeks at a time is not an indication that we are that we are an empire in collapse, I don't know what is. One wonders eventually there will be a currency that is more stable, and the dollar will become some sort of funny-looking backwater. That was, you know, something that used to be something. I'm more convinced now than I have ever been. You know, the shutdown shouldn't have happened at all. There was a deal on the table. And to the great consternation and fury of no small number of liberals and progressives, Chuck Schumer went to the White House and said, all right, you want your $20 billion, we'll give you your goddamn wall. For Christ's sakes, just please leave those children alone. Whether they're one-year-old children or they're full-grown adults who have been here all their lives, leave them the fuck alone. Here, take your stupid goddamn wall, some of which has to be invisible or see-through or something, some of which has windows so that we can watch for when they fling the big bales of the marijuanas with their Roman-style catapults over the walls. Sure, here's $20 billion of taxpayer money that we can't afford, but Jesus Christ, Donnie, here, build your goddamn wall, but leave the children alone. And Dirty Donnie was ready to go. Until Tom Cotton and the freak Mark, I can't, what is his name, Meadows? Is it Meadows? From North Carolina, real serious Freedom Caucus types, said, "Oh no, Mr. President, you don't want to do that. You don't want to deal with you don't want a deal that includes DACA. We want to throw those dirty little greasers out, don't we?" Yeah, definitely one of the... Because whoever talks to him last, right? And that is... And that's how the deal got squirreled. Meanwhile, over here on our side, there were people who were going, Goddamn establishment shills, goddamn Joe Manchin, goddamn Heidi Heitkamp, goddamn Claire McCaskill, goddamn Doug Jones. They voted to keep the government open. Never even suspecting for a moment that Chuck Schumer knows how to count votes, knew how to count votes. And because Chuck Schumer didn't need them right that minute, but he did need them in the Senate, say, in 2019, he said, all y'all come from Trump-pansy states. Go vote with the Republicans. It'll play big at home. You've got elections to win. Goddamn neoliberal establishment shills. Might as well have voted for Roy Moore. precious little progressives can't count, but Chuck Schumer can. Yeah, a small handful of allegedly progressive radio types probably had babies live on air over that. Well, no, they never actually work live, so they had pre-recorded babies on air. But you get the point. Yeah, that too. Randy pointing out that General Kelly had a... Well, he's a racist. We know that. He's absolutely a racist, John Kelly is. And he was in the mix, too. But an inordinate amount of influence was given to that shitbird Tom Cotton. But I just... we've got to get... I mean, here's the challenge. And it's something over which almost all of us are entirely powerless. We got to get from here to, what, November 6th, 2018, without the world descending into a nuclear conflagration. That is not small potatoes. It's also nothing we can really do anything about. But somehow or another, we have to figure out how to get to November 6th and how to have a majority in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. As I've said before, it is going to take something almost bigger than supermajorities to do that. Because of the way the House, and especially where the House is concerned, because of the way the House is gerrymandered. Whatever the registration deadlines are, especially in states that like to suppress votes and require photo IDs and shit like that, we have to get the word out to people to get registered and get their goddamn photo IDs so that they can overwhelm the polls. So that they can vote in such numbers as will make it impossible to suppress the ejection of the Republican Party from its majority status. Ah, but there's one more wrinkle. We're all going to have to agree. Why am I even saying this? We're all going to have to agree that some Democrat is better than any Republican come November. And we're going to have to reach that agreement in every congressional district in the United States. And we're going to have to reach that conclusion in 26 states or 25 states in the Senate. Oh, no, more than that. That's the number of Democrats up for re-election. Then we need to take Arizona, Nevada. We got Alabama. Never thought we were going to... Yeah, but goddamn, he voted with the Republicans. Might as well have been Roy Moore. Shut up. Didn't think we were going to get Alabama. We got Alabama. Because that's going to be a vote for a Democratic majority leader. Got a shot at an open seat in Tennessee, sunshine. And we had, and we've got to realize that come November, any Democrat, some Democrat is better than any Republican. We can do this if we have enough brains to do this. That means if you get out there and you bust your ass in the primary and you got your yard sign and your bumper stickers and your little emery board and your packs of candidates' name printed sunflower seeds and on you and you Facebooked and you tweeted and you Instagrammed and Snapchatted for your candidate, and your candidate comes up short, you still show up in November, and you vote for the Democrat. Because that is the only way. It's the only hope. That is the only damned hope this once great nation has. Because we can't keep shambling from 3 week CR to 3 week CR to 3 week CR. And we need majorities in the House and Senate that can finally put Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell to bed in a sleeper hold. It's that grave. It's that existential. And I'm sure some of us will be tempted when we hear the siren song of, we need a third party, we need a third party. Well, I'm in a safe district. I'll vote for the third party so that they can finally reach a high enough percentage to get federal funding. Yes, that's what I'll do. No, not this time. That's like July the 4th, 1776, and saying, well, you know, I'm not going to sign the Declaration of Independence. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sign the back of my matchbook, and I'm going to get free art lessons to draw Spunky and the Pirate. That's what that is. Because if we don't do that, it ain't going to get any better. Isaac asking, so Joe Manchin can depend on your vote this year? You're goddamn right he can. Because Isaac, I know who he's going to be running against. If you were in West Virginia, Isaac, would you go to the polls in November and vote for Don Blankenship? Would you, Isaac? A guy who incinerated 29 human beings and doesn't give a goddamn to this day about it? Or Patrick Morrissey? And that's the more likely outcome, Patrick Morrissey. Our attorney general. Crooked as a dog's hind leg. Filthy rich on blood-soaked dollars lining his pocket from that came from helping to create the opioid crisis in West Virginia and many other states. You're goddamn right I'm going to vote for Joe Manchin. If there's less than 5 percentage points between Joe Manchin and his opponent, I'm going to do it with a smile on my face. You know why? Because I love my country. Because Joe is, Joe's a centrist and about halfway a Republican, and I suggested he should have shifted to he should have just become a Republican like Trump asked him to. But he didn't. And the Democratic Party in West Virginia is little more than a cult of personality for Joe Manchin. So you're damn right. Come November 6th, if there's 5 points or less between him and probably Patrick Morrissey, I will gladly vote for Joe Manchin because I want us to have a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House. The calculation is really that simple. In the middle of an existential crisis such as our country is in, we don't have time for vanity candidates. We don't have time for candidates whose campaigns are based solely upon the need of fundraisers to raise money to fatten their wallets. Courtesy of Arthur. Yeah, Bob, but voting, like, only reinforces the electoral political system that, like, wants the status quo and perpetuates the idea that the two-headed corporatocracy will be in favor of the revolution. No. That your only mistake. Your only mistake in that, Arthur, was to refer to it as the revolution. It's the apocalypse, dude. Meanwhile, hung like Jesus says, what kind of summer will it be coming up? Seriously. We're not going to have any 40-degree Julys like we're having 60-degree Januaries. It's going to be hotter than fuck. And the summer after that's going to be even hotter. And after that, and after that, and after that, and after that. Hung like Jesus points out, America is officially a joke. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, one, Don Blankenship didn't incinerate 29 people. They burned voluntarily. Two, he's not just Don Blankenship. He's real-life cartoon Dick Dastardly Don Blankenship. He is all that in a bag of chips. But by the way, I owe Arthur a little Sparkle Pony jingle there. We've got to have a little bit more to us in approaching electoral politics than privileged personal tantrums. It's like being in a museum and looking at and just sort of scooting along the walls so that you never actually see any individual painting, but just see little blobs of color and just react to the blobs of color. You got to step back. One step, two step, three step, four step. Oh, look. Holy shit. It's a painting. Unless, of course, it's like the Jackson Pollock room or something like that. Because it's all just blobs of color. But seriously, the literal existence of the United States is at stake. I'm convinced of that. And as I've said before, they don't put blinking going out of business signs in the front of empires. But if they did, ours would have been blinking so goddamn long that the neon was beginning to go me 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 me. And blink out periodically. I loathe Joe Manchin. But he's gonna look like Bernie fucking Sanders compared to Patrick Morrissey. Jesus, just look up. Well, how would we frame this search term? Patrick Morrissey, anti-abortion, false testimony. Because he's not just a gut bucket sleaze bag for the opioid industry and his wife. He's also a fetus fetishist. Anybody progressive or centrist or establishment shills will tell you in this state that Patrick Morrissey, it's the one thing most of us agree on. He's a scumbag. And he has grand ambitions to be a member of the Senate of the United States. But that's quite a choice. Senator Jenkins, Senator Blankenship, Senator Morrissey. Or Senator Manchin. I'll take Senator Manchin. 8 days out of the week, I'll take Senator Manchin on that. Because there's nobody else that has a chance of winning that seat and helping the Democrats have a majority. The preciously hopeless Mountain Party doesn't. And the person who's challenging Joe in the primary doesn't at all, even a little bit. I mean, I buy a Powerball ticket every now and then. Those are 1 in 290 million odds. The person challenging Joe Manchin in the primary doesn't have 1 in 290 million chance. Plain and simple. Meanwhile, going back to Trumpanzee's giving Trump a pass for the whole hooker situation, the porn star situation, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana points out, Trumpanzees would sit and watch this asshole stoop his wife and daughters and drink a beer while cheering. He's making her great again. Yeah. You are great, Stormy. You remind me of my daughter. Yeah. Marty says, Bob, sorry to be the wet blanket here, but I agree with Scott. I'm not voting for Feinstein. Well, then hope that the rest of your fellow Californians do, because you need her. We need her. Hillbilly me, I need her. And it's either going to be, I take it back. Y'all got the whole jungle primary thing? I don't know. If there's no risk of a Republican taking that seat, groovy. Vote for who you want to. And Marty pointed that out. Of course, with our system here in California, our general election might involve two Dems, Feinstein and somebody else anyway. If it does, fine. That's fine. That's beautiful. Do what you want to do. God, if we had that in West Virginia, we'd never get to vote for a Democrat in a general election.
Serve them right.
I had no idea, Scott. Robert in Australia, you never know what's going to catch people's attention on this program. Jackson Pollock, we've got one of those blue poles. It cost a bomb when the government purchased it back in 1973. No idea what it's worth these days. And we've just come through another extreme heat warning weekend, a couple of days at 90 degrees Fahrenheit to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It was that. Open the front door and inhale the heat weather. Ain't going to get any cooler. For the next hour, not for the next hour. Let's do it now. There's no pressure. It's not like we've got a mark to hit or anything. Had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. It goes to a CNBC story. I love these stories that the for-profit media promulgates about stuff that the super rich buy. This survival silo for the super rich costs $3 million per floor. When the end of the world comes, the rich will be ready. It's a doomsday bunker missile silo. $3 million per floor. By Grapthar's hammer. What a savings. And Darlene observes, they'll go nuts not being able to play the stock market. Then they'll turn and eat each other as they descend into madness watching the virtual TV of the seasons and what the planet used to look like. Can't wait to see it happen. Hang on. Oh, that's right. All the rest of us, we peons, will all be dead. But they'll be in their silos. Yeah. Meanwhile, note coming from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. States' rights? You bet. Nah, of course we aren't talking about government anymore. No one is. These bastards are getting their kicks in being powerful enough to turn the system on and off like a light switch. Why not? If you can turn something off for 2 days and then turn it right back on, why not do it? While the clocks on the silly news networks count it down by the second, stupid expressions on the reporters' faces pretending it's some kind of government crisis. Is it? Yesterday, maybe. But not now. Because it's not a government. You, me, we're the government. These bastards, they have power. The priority of power. New York paid the Interior Department to keep the Statue of Liberty open. Good for New York. I love it. They said to the bastards in D.C., fuck you. We're New York. We're a real government. Liberty stays open. And fuck you shithole miserable cotton-picking states, too. This is New York City, and the lady doesn't get turned off for one New York minute. Any problems? We didn't think so. Goddamn right. Regards, Steve. On the Gulf Coast, down in one of those cotton-picking states. New York did that, you know. They weren't going to put up with the bullshit. Because they have, as Steve notes, a functioning government. And, of course, it's the states with functioning governments that are taking it on the chin as a result of the GOP tax scam bill. Somehow or another, I've ceased to think that was an accident. Meanwhile, from the Hill, Clarity sends along a little something-something that matters to those of us here in the community. Today, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini imposed tariffs of 30%. On imported solar panel technology in a bid to protect domestic manufacturers while signaling a more aggressive approach toward China. Yeah, what he's hoping is just to wipe out the solar industry generally. Keep those prices high. Make sure people don't adopt. The move is a major blow for the $28 billion solar industry, which gets about 80% of its solar panel products from imports. The Solar Energy Industries Association predicted the tariffs would increase prices and kill 23,000 jobs. Well, they can go and be beautiful coal miners. That's what they can do. The group represents manufacturers as well as installers, sellers, and others in the field. Abigail Ross Hopper, the group's president, said, while tariffs in this case will not create adequate cell or module manufacturing to meet U.S. demand or keep foreign-owned Suniva and Solar World afloat, they will create a crisis in a part of our economy that has been thriving, which will ultimately cost tens of thousands of hard-working blue-collar Americans their jobs. Blue-collar. But some blue-collar jobs are, of course, more equal than other blue-collar jobs. If you come home from your blue-collar job and you're not smeared in fucking coal dust, baby, you don't matter. How about that? Jobs, jobs, jobs. Where was American capitalism? When the solar boom was taking place, why aren't we making shit tons of solar panels here? Because we're not. I mean, every now and then, some news outlet will need a feel-good story, and they'll run out and they'll They'll run out and they'll do a piece about some soul or somebody somewhere. But most of the stuff is made in China, and we predicted it. Back during the reign of the Kenyan Muslim usurper. You know, we talked about the fact that that all the Republican talk about clean coal technology could never replace the future. Well, the future happened. It just didn't happen here. The tariffs unveiled Monday apply to all imported solar photovoltaic cells and modules, the main technology on panels that convert solar energy into electricity. While the action is targeted at imports from China, Trump's tariffs apply to all imports since Chinese manufacturers have moved operations to other countries. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer made a statement today announcing the decision. The president's action makes clear, again, that the Trump administration will always defend American workers, farmers, ranchers, and businessmen in this regard, except when we're putting tens of thousands of them out of work. I added the last part, obviously. Meanwhile, Solar World, which is German, or a wholly owned subsidiary of a German firm, they wanted 50% tariffs for the Chinese stuff. It won't save Solar World. Suniva, well, they're excited about the tariffs, but they're not going to be able to meet the demand, and they're not going to be able to provide the necessary services. But I'm sure that somebody will be hooting about how this is going to make the sun great again. And there won't be a hell of a lot of pushback in the for-profit media. Amazing, isn't it? Thanks, Clarity. Asa says, forget mining coal. Why can't the out-of-work solar installer start mining Bitcoin? Big, beautiful Bitcoin. Oh, don't get me started. And so that pretty much takes us to the I've filibobstered away the first half of the program now. So if you'd like to jump in and engage in some conversation, I heartily welcome you so to do. You know the number's 304-574-8178. The number 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn, get you into the program this Morin Monday. And, well, thank you, Silent R. Lamar. You still do a mean hillbilly. I try to practice every now and then. I'll go into it like a roadhouse bar or something and not talk all sissified, like I'm a knower of English or anything. And I just use my hillbilly accent. So that's where we find ourselves. Big thanks going out to two folks. I got a really kind note from Randy in PA saying that he was throwing throwing an extra 25 into the kitty. Imagine this, because my birthday is upcoming. That was really kind, Randy, and it really, really warmed my heart, and I thank you. And then Catherine, Kate, out in Arizona, Stan, jumped in as well. So that we've raised almost half of an evening's funding on that. We got $115 to go, and that's huge. And I thank you very kindly, both of you. Thank you very, very much indeed. So for this Moran Monday, let's take a little break and then come back and see what's on folks' minds. This is listener-supported conversation radio for Moran Monday, the 22nd day of January, when it's 22 degrees Celsius in the Northern Hemisphere in Appalachia. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you.
seemed appropriate. Boz Skaggs, Breakdown, Dead Ahead, for this this Moran Monday, the 22nd of January. Thanks, Henry. Thanks a bunch. That goes a long way toward making things even simpler already. Okay, so we are, we're only $65 away from finishing the evening. That's huge at the halfway mark of the program. And let's run over, what's that? I filibobstered all the way halfway of the program. Jim says, you're long-winded tonight. Need to get another star-based robe. Old one's too little and will not close in the back. Please wear drawers as one can see your ass. Check with Tattoos and Roses and Muffy. somebody's hidden a webcam in the studio. Well, okay, I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to ruin anybody's dinner, but I guess I'll go. It got up to 70 degrees today, so here it's 72 in the studio. So, yeah, it's another night of naked radio. Just is. You got it. When the opportunities present themselves in the month of January to do naked radio, well, when it's in you and it's in the situation, you don't mess with the universe that way. Meanwhile, Robert pointed out something. Robert Australia pointed out something to me the other day. He said, Bob, if our government was unable to pass a budget, it would trigger an immediate, it just happens. It's automatic. You can't pass a budget, the government shuts down. Elections are triggered immediately, so you can throw the bums out. What's that? Old Crocodile Kincaid? Yes. Throw the blood as that's what I say. Throw them out right now. Be quick about it. Exactly. Us, on the other hand, we sit around. Jesus, this country. Oh. Robert in Australia says, jobs, jobs, jobs. The future didn't happen here. Our current prime minister is doing the tired old jobs, jobs, job bit as he travels around the country. And this is the prime minister who turned our national broadband network from a world-class system into something that's already out of date. Actually, it was out of date before they started building their quicker, faster, cheaper system, which will be delivered 4 years behind schedule at twice the cost while delivering the sort of speeds we already had on ADSL2. Lots of jobs, jobs, jobs in the jabs, jabs, jabs in the future have already been lost as a result. As for the future, it's happening in New Zealand. They're building a world-class fiber-to-the-premises ultra-fast internet with speeds available up to 1 gigabyte per second if you want it. And a New Zealand company has put its first satellite into orbit. So when the shite hits the fan, consider New Zealand as the place to go. Yeah, but Robert, Australia will always have a warm and happy place in my heart. Thank you. Silent R. Lamar says, it's nice to know you have balls instead of ice cubes. There's been a couple of nights in here. It's been a question, an open question. Let's run over to, thank you. Did I say thank you to Henry for knocking us down to, only $65 to go. Thank you, Henry. And thank you, Jamie, for re-upping your subscription. That was big. I really appreciate that. And if you happen to be listening and you think you're subscribed and you go, hey, it didn't come out, these cards go bad, they go out of date, what have you. And then I got some note from Skype saying, not Skype, from PayPal saying, we're going to reconfigure the way we designate subscriptions. So we're going to be using two J's instead of one check mark in the code now. So this may affect, so for all I know, just keep an eye on it, and I'll thank the subscribers every night. And if you're subscribing and you don't hear your name, shoot me an email at bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I'll see if I've gotten one of those your subscription has been canceled kind of things. You know. But then again, I also realize that I piss people off from time to time, probably when I do, when Earther and I do the funny little voices and things, and And I talk about the fact that, yes, I will vote for Joe Manchin in November because I can think, you know, more broadly than just, like, right here. Look, make no mistake. Be clear about this before I go to the phones. In some ways, it would probably be easier to end mountaintop removal if Joe Manchin was replaced by a Republican. Joe Manchin's never going to be replaced by a progressive. No. At least not for the foreseeable, like, 20 years or so. 10, 15, who knows. But anyway, we do our work and we go Senate to Senate to Senate, office to office to office, and they say things like, well, that's terrible what those coal companies are doing to you poor hillbillies. It's just terrible. You know what? It looks like you got a very nice little bill there, and it would do the job, wouldn't it? Oh, yes, it would. What does Senator Manchin think about it? And depending on how frayed your temper is by what time of day it is, you look at him and you say, who gives a goddamn what Joe Manchin thinks about it? People are dying. Or you say, well, you know, Joe's a friend of coal. Oh. Well, if both senators from West Virginia were Republicans and both senators from Kentucky are Republicans, Democrats wouldn't give much of a damn what they thought. But the calculus whereby you lose a Democratic seat and pick up a Republican seat and then pick up another Republican, no. So I want a Democratic Senate majority. And so, and by the way, the one thing that is guaranteed, if he were to lose in the primary, and he's not, you get Senator Morrissey, or even better, Senator Blankenship. And wouldn't that be the ultimate whoopee cushion and joy buzzer from the goddess of irony? For a so-called anti-mountaintop removal activist to be the Democratic nominee for senator and then get her ass handed to her by Don Blankenship. Because it'd happen. Morrissey would grind her into the dirt like a fucking bug. But that's where that is. So let's run over and check in with Thomas from FYINation.com. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. I know I've been banned for a month, but
You have been?
Well, that's what you said last time. So I
Okay. Right. No. I understand. Yes. Okay. Through the magnanimity and the generosity of Bob Kincaid, great Wizard of Oz, I lift the ban.
That's beautiful. Because
Holly Smoot, it is over.
Okay, from one Democratic apologist to another.
Goddamn establishment shill. Yes.
Considering how much I supported Bernie and how much shit I got for that, from my own family, in this. Nonsensical argument with somebody on Facebook who seems to think the Democratic Party is going to be dead in 6 years, and the Democratic Party doesn't give a shit about one person, doesn't believe that they don't give a shit about you. It's like, okay, you're being hyperbolic and telling us stuff we don't already know. The parties are corporate tools, but it's like, okay, what are you going to do about it? Have you started a podcast about it? Have you become an activist? Have you marched? Have you done anything? Have you done anything other than bitch? Now, one particular person I know has, who talked about the Democratic Party being not giving a shit about you. That person I know has. So I'm not on that person. But certain people who have this fantasy, and I admit I did once, because I would love a third party to be viable. a real third party to be viable. But as I told this person on Facebook, Bernie is an independent, right? And even though he ran as a Democratic Party person, because that was the smart thing to do, because he's not dumb. Bernie Sanders ran as a in the Democratic Party, knowing that he probably wouldn't win and come as close as he did. But we stood up for him, and a lot of people in the Horn Community Commune did, and FY Nation did, and everything else. Then by Schill or by Hillary winning, he lost, however you want to describe it. But he still got more states than any one Republican did, including Ted Cruz, with all the Republicans running against the Orange Menace. All right? Let's remember that.
Yeah.
And I also want to point out to all those who believe that the Green Party is the savior, or any other liberal party is the savior, does Bernie Sanders caucus with them? Who does Bernie Sanders caucus with? Does he caucus with the Republican Party? No.
No.
He caucuses with the Democratic shill party that everybody wants to bitch about, because right now, that's how it is. If the Green Party were in power, you know what? I bet you he'd do it with the Green Party. But they're not. People who think that the Democratic Party is dead, I'm sorry, wrong. And if by any lightning strike from the goddess of irony, vanity candidate Jill Stein, this is where you and Tom Hartman completely agree, by the way, and me, all three of us agree.
Tom and I also agree that every professional radio show needs a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle, too. Don't forget about that.
Well, yes. I actually have the Homo Demon app, because, you know, everybody needs to know whether or not you have a gay or a lesbian in your family. We hustle that. And apps are the future. I mean, have you seen the Amazon store in Seattle?
You there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, you just disappear every now and then.
Oh, okay. It must be my Wi-Fi and crap. Sorry. But no, these people who believe the Democratic Party is dead, we understand that it's corporatist. We have to, Frank Luntz and the Republican Party has done a great job at dividing us. And you are absolutely right. We need to stay united for 2018. Midterms matter. This matters. And saving what's left of the democracy, if it matters to you, matters. And local races where it's a possibility for a third party person, awesome. We're great. Love it. But nationally, show me one way Jill Stein wouldn't have been Jimmy Carter'd, worse than Jimmy Carter, by the Democrats and the Republicans, so it would never happen again. If she won. If she managed to somehow win. Show me how that wouldn't have happened. Explain to me, if you're a Jill Stein supporter, and I'm being dead on serious, and had I been able to ask her this question during the campaign, I would have asked her that question.
And see, you never would have gotten a straight answer, Thomas.
Well, yeah.
Because she can't give one of those.
Exactly. And no, I'm sorry, no Green Party candidate can. Because there's no Green Party person in Congress. There's no Green Party caucus. You have to.
Well, there would be if the goddamn establishment shills would get out of the way.
See, again, yeah. And this comes back to what I've said before, and people are sick of hearing me say it. You know, unless they actually understand it, the truth of it, and then they're like, well, yeah, you probably better explain this again. There's no law that says there can only be a two-party system. There's no law that actually says that specifically. Not in the Constitution, not in the U.S.
Yep.
Code, Not in the Code of Federal Regulations. Nothing. But the practical, the practical effect of our system is that you're only going to have two parties. Because whenever a third party rises up, and there's American history to point to this.
Yep.
If it becomes strong enough, it replaces the weaker of the two parties.
Whig Party turned into the Republican Party.
And then you're back to two parties again.
Yep.
And until you, you know, unless you, you know, unless you're silly enough to buy into all that Wolfpack bullshit and think that an Article 5 constitutional convention would be a fabulous idea.
Hey, stop picking on me.
I'm sorry. You know, I mean, when you do something, when you do something that's dead from the neck up, Thomas, I'm gonna tell you because I'm just that kind of friend.
You like killing that one unicorn that I want to keep alive. You like just slaying it every time you
can.
Well,
you know,
that's okay.
That's like, look, okay. if you and I were walking down the street, if you and I were walking down the street and we were going by a bar and it was like a dive bar that had signs in the window saying, you know, God hates fags and you know, all kinds of mean, nasty, homophobic stuff and transphobic and LGBTQQ phobic stuff. And you stopped and said, Bob, I want to go in there and have a beer with those fine people. I would say, Thomas, if you walk in there, they're going to stomp a mud hole in you, and there won't even be, there won't be enough of you left for me to bring out in a fucking sandwich bag. And you'd say, but Bob, it looks like such a wonderful, it's such a great idea. And I'd say, Thomas, if you go in there, but, you know, Bob, I think I can go in there and find common ground with those people. They're Americans just like me. Thomas, first they're going to punch you in the mouth, then they're going to cut you off at the knees and kick your ass for being short. But, Bob, it looks like such a great bar. Thomas, it's a cesspit. And it'll probably hurt when you pee just because you walked through the door. But see, that's an Article 5 convention, and that's these Simon Pure fools from fucking Wolfpack that think an Article 5 convention would just be nifty, groovy, neato, keen, and we can go in there and get rid of Citizens United. Yay, us.
Yeah, and
they wouldn't be through the fucking door before the Trumpanzees and the maggots and the birthers and the deathers and the birchers and the booger eaters and the Republicans and the libertarians had taken all of their clothes and I don't know, crammed a beer tap handle up their ass and beaten them half to death with the fucking tire iron behind the bar.
Thank you for that visual.
And then look at them once they're laying on the ground, weeping and bleeding, and say, you want to negotiate some more? And then kick them in the fucking ribs.
What is this, the fucking UN now? That being said, that's where we agree. Because when I've talked to Wolfpack folks, genuine believers, more so than I, they don't have any after what happens next. Oh, well, the states, we're relying on the states that had the, but what about the Republicans? But we're relying on, but no. What about this? And you're right about that. And that's why I don't see, I see other movements, and I always think of poop whenever I say that, but that I'm dirty-minded. I see other movements that are more likely to happen if it is ever to happen, or it has to be Congress. And then we had need good people willing to do that. But I live in reality where I know it's probably not going to happen. And since I live in reality, this is where we agree. I agree with you that to ride this shithole out, I will get on the talking donkey and ride the talking donkey. I will support my primary talking donkey. And if my primary talking donkey loses, I will be pissed off about it for a little while. And then I will go support the other donkey that won.
Ta-da! See, but I didn't figure I was going to have a problem explaining that to you, Thomas.
No, no, you didn't. But I did for other people who are on this and who got mad at me and literally left my show because I was getting on Jill Stein as a vanity candidate. I love the Green Party platform. I love the Green Party internationally because they're viable internationally.
Well, but internationally, you know, when I hear Green Party, for the most part, I think about Northern European states.
Yes.
And yes. But even in Germany, you can get a few Green Party seats, but did you happen to notice the minority party that got the really big shitload of seats in Germany last time through?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
AfD? Right. Alternative für Deutschland?
Basically Nazis.
Not even basically.
Yes.
Nazis.
Well,
Nazis without the... Nazis without the swag and memorabilia store.
Because it's illegal. You know? And I think Merkel would probably have a heart attack, considering she's from Eastern Germany. You know? But, yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. And even that. So people need to be realistic about that. And, by the way, they do that too in Britain. We talked about this during on my show on Friday. Where if we had a shutdown in Britain, right, Theresa May, basically Trump in a dress, without Twitter, she would have to go to the Queen, and not my best friend Stephen, and say, Your Majesty, we're fucked. I need an election. And she'd say, carry on. Get the fuck out. And probably nod with her corgis or whatever. I think I just insulted an entire dog breed, didn't I? But
I think you
whatever.
Did.
Sorry, dogs. Bark, bark. And they have a new election because they couldn't come up with a budget. And they don't even have a constitution written down, and they can figure this shit out better than us. They just have some weird set of rules and rituals, and you know, God saves the queen, and somehow she's still around. She ain't going anywhere. Sorry, little Georgie.
Oh, I say, mate, you can't do that. You couldn't even approach it. Never mind, old story.
You're on the wrong island, and one's an island and the other's a continent. God, I'm Sarah Palin-ing now. At least I got it right, though. But that's why they have third parties, because they're viable. In that type of parliamentary system of government. They're not viable in the system of government we have here. And I wish people would get that through their thick heads. They've made it unobtainable from the jump. The moment we had political parties, and George Washington warned us about this. And he was no great saint either.
Well, you've worried Marty.
Oh, Jesus.
Marty says, I don't know, Bob. I think Thomas just committed an act of war likening Theresa May to Trump.
I'm trying to get hate mail, Bob. DoubtingTom@FYNation.com.
You're
trying to get contributions.
You are a kinky soul. You know that?
Yes. Yes, I am. And, you know, that's why my girlfriend lets me step out, because she knows I'll always come back, because I'm also a needy bitch.
Nice.
She's like, you won't call me mommy. You'll just call me. Mike Pence joke.
I understand.
Bad. There you go. But no, I just wanted to, you know, let you know that while I'm sure some of our horn community commune may be pulling their hair out, I am not, even with the, you know, walking into a bar and throwing my unicorn under the bus with Wolfpack. I, you know, I accept it. I accept, you know, defeat in the hands of corporatism, because the robots are here already, you know, and they're going to take our jobs when the, you know, people who, you know, by no fault of their own, don't. Just saying.
I know.
So, but I wanted to let you know that at least one, you got one person. And thank you for unbanning me for a month. If you want to reban me for the whole Corky thing, I was thinking Corky from Murphy Brown.
Right.
By the way, one of the best shows ever in the 90s to actually talk about corporate news in a comedy setting where they told the truth about why corporate news won't do a story. It was because of the advertisers, and the executive producer quit because they one of the hosts do a story about at the time the tobacco industry, and they had that all the facts, they had everything done, and he decided he was leaving the show, and this is how they had him leave the show. He quit, and they actually showed how the American people in comedy how news actually works. And this is like the mid-90s, late 80s that they did this. So this has been going on for years. This is nothing new.
Well,
so
it's,
thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of not. Yeah, exactly.
So I wanted to throw that out there and give you a little bit of get a moral support, and hope that you didn't hate me too much over my Miss USA Melania thing. And I adore you. And I hope to talk to you soon. And you have a good week. And I hope your balls don't freeze anytime soon.
Okay, that's too many references to my testicles in one one radio program, or in fact in one career. When you get right down to it, so.
Then maybe I shouldn't ask for an interview.
Goodbye, Thomas.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's keep it rolling and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott. Scott.
Oh, yeah. Bob, you there?
Yeah, that would be me.
Okay, I'm sorry. you're just either I'm real slow on my pickup or you're real quick on your pickup. I don't know which
one it is. It's the interweb tubes. The signal has to go from being carried on the back of a wagon, figuratively and possibly literally speaking, relative to frontier communications, to where it reaches some sort of, till they can get it onto the, you know, the Enterprise or whatever and send it zooming to you.
Well, anyway, I don't know how the fuck it all works. All I know is I'm glad I called, and I'm glad you answered.
Well, I'm glad you called, too.
And a message for Thomas on the topic of reality. The other day I mentioned one of my all-time top five favorite movies, 1,000 Clowns.
Yes.
And there's a critical scene where it was, see, the child welfare people came to visit Murray Burns and his 12-year-old nephew, Nick, over a matter of custody and the child's welfare. Murray is a fired children's TV show writer. He used to be the head writer for the Chuckles the Chipmunk TV show, okay? But he has lost his job, and they've ignored letters from the Child Welfare Agency. Murray's reasoning is, I never answer letters from big organizations, okay? So anyway, in desperation, the man and woman team from the Child Welfare Board show up unannounced to find out what's going on regarding Nick's welfare. And they go round and round about it, and the male member of the Child Welfare Board team, William Daniels, tries to get the conversation back on some kind of even keel, okay, because he's dealing with a real nonconformist in Murray Burns, okay? And he says, well, now, Mr. Burns, back to reality, okay? And Jason Robards, who plays Murray, says, I'll only go as a tourist. So that's my word of wisdom to Thomas and anybody else who would benefit from it in terms of reality. It's all right to go, but go as a tourist. So that's that. But in terms of third parties, in my lifetime, there have been two presidential candidates that I can think of who made a respectable, or even Punky knows this, who through
Punky knows all, tells less.
Exactly. We need to outfit him with one of those robes, those purple robes, and one of those eight balls, you know, because he's a wise little fucker. He truly is. But in my lifetime, and I'm 63, there are two presidential candidates who ran on a third party in the actual presidential race in November, the election, who made a respectable showing. One was George Wallace in 68, and the other was Ross Perot in 92. And one of them got 13-some-odd percent of the popular vote, and the other got like 19-some percent of the popular vote. So it's not an outrageous thing to think that a third-party candidate could run and do well, even better than those two. The trick is finding a candidate who can attract from the left and the right and the center and who can outshine the establishment candidates by saying and meaning and showing a capacity for action in areas that will resonate with enough people, you know, to cause a victory. And we're still not there yet. I mean, Jill Stein is the latest incarnation of that notion, then it proves we've got a long fucking way to go. But that's me.
But what's the difference between, or what's the point of making a showing, Scott?
To actually win. That's the key to the equation. And that hinges upon getting enough from the left, enough support from the right, and enough support from the center, and really, honestly, being not only a legitimate alternative, but a legitimate alternative who can be effective and actually not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. And we're way far away from ever getting that. It's possible, but we're not there yet. And one of two things will happen. Either that type of candidate will ultimately be successful one day, or they will get close enough that it'll put the fear of God into Republicans and Democrats to where they would actually get their fucking act together and be more like a third-party candidate who's successful and effective would be. So, you know, for now, I'll stick with the Democrats because as bad as they are, they're always going to be better than the Republicans. There's never a time when the fucking Republicans are just not slingers of shit, and they've proven, hell, this shutdown proves that they are not interested in governing in any meaningful, effective, useful way.
Any more than the Greens are.
Exactly.
Maybe less.
They're bull.
Maybe less.
They're bullshit artists, is what they are.
But let me make something clear real quick, Scott, if you don't mind.
It's Monday. Don't put me through that.
I'm not, and I wasn't being a smartass saying that.
Yes, you were.
No, I wasn't.
That's what we love about you, Bob.
But you know, I had a very nice afternoon. I sat down to a most enjoyable luncheon today with Brother Deacon Gerald, the chairman of the Cathedral Building and Grounds Committee.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were talking about these things. We were talking about them, and I'm not giving anything away. But I'm not going to say anything he said. I'm going to talk about what I said. And in the course of our conversation, I said, "Look it. No matter how many times I get called a neoliberal establishment shill, the fact of the matter is, if you give me enough hard liquor." And maybe a couple of blasts on a doobie. I'm sitting here stone cold sober, and I'm about to say it. I'm probably somewhere on the political spectrum. I'm probably some sort of neo-Leninist, Marxist, Maoist, Sandinista, Castrovian, whatever. All right, because I've got a list. And I realize that in a different situation, and under different circumstances, no, I'm joking about the list. I don't have a list. But I understand why revolutionaries in other countries, I understand why the first thing they did is they started putting people up against a wall. And clearing out the troublemakers.
Mm-hmm.
Because no revolution can succeed unless it does that. And then again, it's not even necessarily a matter of other countries, because unlike so many Americans and all fucking Republicans, I know some American history, and I know the purges that took place in places like Philadelphia and New York in the immediate aftermath of the American Revolution. It was not a good thing to be a Tory after Britain quit, gave up, surrendered, whatever. After they admitted that they were licked and the revolution was won and all of that stuff, the people that they left behind were not welcomed with open arms by the revolutionary government or the revolutionary patriots. There was a lot of tar and a lot of feathers.
Yeah.
And probably a few ropes were involved, and it was all and the people on the receiving end were the ones who were saying, "God save the king." Yeah, well, you can. God may save him, but it ain't gonna save you. And the biggest and there was a considerable jump in the population of Canada in that aftermath. Those polite people that we like so well in Canada. A lot of them are the generations later descendants of the nice people that we ran out of what had been the colonies because we just didn't want them here anymore.
Yeah.
They were purged. So I understand the motivation behind all of that, just to finish the thought. But I also understand from a realistic standpoint, you gotta get power first. And unless some of these sparkly people actually think that they're going to go out and start an armed revolution in this country, and if they think that, fuck them forever with a red-hot poker.
Well, here's the deal.
You're going to have to get power through conventional means and then begin to exercise it.
I laugh quietly to myself when I hear and see online these people talking about, that whole dynamic hinges on previous action. And that previous action in this day and age is getting your fucking nose out of the telephone screen or the laptop screen or whatever screen you gaze into for hours on end, because you can't do it with pronouncements and mouth music. You've got to get out there, and as the old 60s saying goes, you've got to be part of the solution, because if you're not that, you're part of the problem. And the problem in this case is the fact that people are real big with their words, but in terms of their actions, they're no-shows. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me. I don't know. It's just frustrating as hell to know that there's a group of people in this country who are not too far to the left or too far to the right or too batshit crazy in the middle, that they actually love this country and they want this country to live up to its advertising, okay, and its foundation, you know, its founding documents and notions, okay? That I wonder if such a thing will ever be possible, simply because of the way human nature is, that we're too invested in not having anything at stake, not having any, what is the dynamic I'm trying to think of? They won't kick it up to the next level and actually behave in a manner that's consistent with the outcome that they wish to see occur. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I mean, come on.
Sure. But that's not driving you into paroxysms of political stupidity, is it?
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. And see, this is the thing that, see, I'm, the big topic of conversation this year is looking back 50 years to 1968, which, as I recall it, was a pretty fucked up year. If you go into Google Books, the first issue of Life magazine for the calendar year 1969, you'll find in its entirety the Life magazine for the title of it was 1968, the incredible year. And I can cite to you month by month, chapter and verse, outrage after worsening outrage that occurred in 1968, that by the time December of 68 arrived, we were damn lucky to have survived it. Okay? And people today are looking back 50 years and saying how much this year is, this situation that we're in now is so like or unlike 1968 was. And to give you an idea of how crazy 68 was, just in terms of politics, when Bobby Kennedy was killed, in a lot of those Midwestern states that he did well in, when he died, for some Democrats, their fallback candidate was George Wallace, of all people. And when I first heard that, I didn't believe it, so I looked it up, and sure enough, Wallace got a fair number of Bobby Kennedy supporters in what was left of the 68 campaign. And when you dig a little deeper into that, you know, what might have caused that to happen, a lot of it had to do with the fact that, like Trump, Wallace was saying some things that resonated with some people that were as upset of the state of things as Kennedy supporters were back in 68. It's crazy, but it's apparently true. Now, I'm not saying let's find another George Wallace. I mean, hell, we saw a version of that in 2016 in the form of Trump. You know, he was channeling Wallace. He was channeling Nixon. And no matter how much he channeled, he was ultimately, we're finding that he was doing nothing more than feeding his ego and talking out of his own ass. I mean, that's my take on Trump.
Well, and I don't think it's that far off. But what do you? I get the Wallace's fallback thing, but you know, Jesus Christ, he's more George Wallace than he is than he. I mean, at least loopy old Ross Perot. Until he started talking about the Martians kidnapping his daughter or whatever that was. at least Ross had legitimately made a shit ton of money and could talk about, that giant sucking sound.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has never actually made any money. All he's done is played a fairly middling game of Monopoly. You know, just to extend the Monopoly metaphor for a minute, Scott.
Yeah.
If you can get a hotel and if you can get hotels on Boardwalk and Park Place, if somebody hits that, you can put them out of the game. But you're probably never going to actually get as much out of it as you put into it.
Yeah.
And the real money is the orange, the orange properties and the red properties?
Yeah.
And that's where you make the money. But Donald Trump is, Monopoly is an interesting metaphor for Trump because it's based on Atlantic City. All those, those are all Atlantic City addresses.
Yeah, and as history shows, he did not do well in Atlantic City.
Right.
You've got to be a special kind of incompetent to not do well owning casinos.
Right. Eventually, to extend the Monopoly metaphor, Donald Trump got run off of Oriental and Baltic. Okay.
Yeah.
it's worth mentioning that he thinks he's got Boardwalk and Park Place with a hotel on it. But the only people who ever landed on it were Russian mobsters. and they were trying to. Oh, his lovely building. Tovarich Donald. Lovely, lovely building. I would like two, please. You want how much? Let me pay you twice as much. We'll call it laundering bill. You'll include laundry with my suite. Ta-da.
Well, and the hotels were red, let's remember,
Yeah.
But just to clarify that George Wallace and RFK supporters notion, God, I hope I didn't lose my thought. It was more of a symptom than a simpatico in terms of political beliefs and ideals and things. It was more of a symptom of where we were headed in 68. It was the same sort of deal as with Trump in 2016. On a certain level, things in the minds of many, things were fucked up. And Trump actually looked like a viable alternative. Well, if that tells you anything, it tells you either A, how fucked up things were, or the perception of fuck-uppedness that was in the minds of some people about the state of things. It's got to be one or the other of those two options. Personally, I don't think in 16 things were that bad other than the choice of candidates. You had on the one hand your Hillary, and you had on your other hand your Trump. Flawed candidates, to be sure, but Jesus, on her worst day, Hillary was a better choice between those two when it came right down to it. And that's why I voted for her, and that's probably why you voted for her, because you said you would,
Right. I don't know how we're
covering old ground, but the fact of the matter is, we are, you know, I'll say again, the primaries are for idealism, and the general is for pragmatism.
Yeah. In the primaries, you vote your heart.
In November, you vote your brain.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not entirely sure where I was going with this, but it all kind of fits, because we're in our collective ass is in a crack.
Okay, so you're on board with my analysis of this is, I mean, yes, it's a constitutional crisis, but we're at existential crisis now.
Yeah, because, I mean, what are the possibilities inherent to the situation when you've got somebody who is that fucked up and crazy and ill-prepared and ill-suited and not qualified? What happens when you get somebody like that in a place of position of authority and he has a bunch of minions who are enabling him? There's never any good outcome in a situation like that. There's only degrees of bad outcomes. Hopefully, some of them are survivable.
Right.
I mean, is this what it's come to? Is this what the fucking American experiment has come to?
Well, we are in a state. I mean, I'd need the engineers and the physicists to chime in on this, but is this the effect of the second law of thermodynamics kicking in and everything moves toward a state of entropy? Or it feels like just what happens to empires.
Well, and you know who could tell us all of these answers in a heartbeat if he were still here? And that would be George Carlin. Because George was funny, but he was also insightful. And he knew what was going on, and he had no illusions about it. I mean, more often than not.
Yeah, and George, you know who else could tell us about it? James Madison.
Or hell, Bill Hicks, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, to a certain extent.
I tend toward the humorists, okay? But there are political minds who brought this country about who could also tell us, hopefully in a way that would be not only enlightening, but because you got to be entertaining in today's political world. If you're not in the center goddamn ring, okay, of the great American political circus, then you're nobody. Because that's what the fucking corporate media thrives on. The spectacle. Jesus.
Exactly.
Well, I don't want to bring you or me any further down in these things that I'm raising. But we've been here between the nature of things today. We've been there before, and we did make it through that. Of course, it gave us Nixon, so maybe we didn't make it. Was that the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end?
It's hard to see Nixon as either one, because you've got the Grant administration, you got the Harding, you got the Harding administration, you've got. Then you get Nixon, then you get Reagan, and like I've said before, I saw the trailers for The Post, and I don't have any patience for it because, well, dadgummit, whatever heroics, whatever journal First Amendment heroics are portrayed in the movie The Post. Went completely to shit when Ben Bradley and Katherine Graham declared that the United States was not allowed to pursue the criminal undertakings of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. The Post did kind of lose its way, wouldn't you think?
Well, and the reasoning that, you know, the country can't withstand another constitutional crisis.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If we had Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine and could go back and have a do-over, and the Post and other organs of information behaved responsibly during the time of Reagan, we might well be in a different world, better one. Because that son of a bitch, hell, here we've got Trump creating brand new messes, and we have yet to undo the damage caused by 8 years of Reagan and 4 years of H.W. Bush, for crying out loud. See, and not to beat a dead president, which I am inclined to do from time to time, but I will maintain until I am here no more that nothing was ever the same after they blew John Kennedy's brains out on the streets of Dallas. That to me I can't even speak in cosmic terms.
We know that Punky agrees.
Well, yeah. he can tell you every move in the Zapruder film. That little bird is more of a conspiracy theorist than I am. But it's a serious notion that, and one book that I would recommend out of the many hundreds, even thousands of books on the JFK case that I would recommend to you and all the Horn people, and that is James Douglas wrote a book about 8 years ago called JFK and the Unspeakable. And it doesn't delve so much into the assassination in terms of who was shooting from where or any of that. It deals primarily with what was Kennedy up to that got him killed by the people, his actions and presence and approach were being threatened, okay? And that's the key to it. Knowing where people were and how many people were shooting and how many shots were fired and how many hit and how many missed will only take you so far. The real story is to be found in why. What is the Latin phrase, who benefits?
Cui bono.
Exactly. And that's not Sonny's Oriental half-sister. That's a question worth pondering in terms of what got Jack Kennedy killed and how we ended up with Trump and all the shit that went on between those two events. Because I'm not saying that there's a connection. I'm just saying that there's a, you know, Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes.
And it does. But, well, no, that is one of those moments. That's, and you can, I mean, something cataclysmic like that is gonna have a reverberating impact. Hell, you can argue that the country wasn't over the assassination of Lincoln. Lincoln likely would have managed the Reconstruction dramatically differently than would have Andrew Johnson.
Well, hell, he could have done that in his sleep almost. And in today's world, Reconstruction and laws that came out of that after Reconstruction went south, so to speak, and the statues and shit that were erected in the earliest part of the 20th century, it all ties in there. I don't know. I'm almost sorry I called today because I brought myself down. I was having a good old Monday, as good as Mondays can be. But Chirps just glanced up. Chirps, the cat's just glanced up at me. Oh, and she's thinking, oh, God, here he goes.
Well, it, you know, once you go down the Kennedy rabbit hole, there's very little coming back, and I recognize that.
Well, and the thing is, put yourself in my position. I'm a 9-year-old kid in November of 63, and we were all bopping along, happily enjoying the new frontier. Just over a year previous, we had managed to make it through the missile crisis, okay, where literally it all could have ended then. And the bulletin comes across that the president's been shot, and that's all we knew initially. And it later came out that he had died. I had an afternoon paper out, the old Washington Daily News, and they let school out early, and I got home, and my mom was watching TV, and she was upset, and finally the papers came. They were at least 2 hours late getting to me, which made them 2 hours late getting to the customers on my little afternoon paper route. And it was after dark by then, given the time of the year. And people would meet me at their doors, and they didn't scream and yell about the paper being so late. A lot of them wanted to talk. Isn't it awful? What does it mean, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a dark, cold, not rainy. It rained a lot the next day. But making my rounds that night as a little 9-year-old kid, who had a little bit on the ball in terms of the world around him, it was scary. I mean, there's no other word for it. It was disconcerting, and it was frightening. And then 10 months later, the official report comes out as to what happened. And as a 10-year-old, I remember reading the big, thick paperback issue of the edition of that. And even then, I could say, well, wait a minute, something just doesn't ring true about the story that they're telling about this. And I don't mean to go down this rabbit hole, but if you can't trust your own government, if there are no anchor points in life, then things are going to be screwed up. And that's exactly what happened in the wake of that. We had Johnson, who, if he had stuck to civil rights and social programs, could have gone down in history as one of the great presidents.
But couldn't be entirely sure that the whole Vietnam thing wasn't what got Kennedy all dead.
Well, yeah, a lot of people believe, and there's actually documentation in The Unspeakable, he was not going to go the way of LBJ in Vietnam. And there were several sources that confirmed that. People close to him knew that after he won and was reelected in 64, he was not going down the Vietnam rabbit hole.
Then, of course, you get the Pentagon Papers and McGeorge Bundy. And the rest, as they say, is a very tragic history.
Yeah. Let me let you go, Bob, because I tend to ramble when we chat, and sometimes good.
The rambling is good, but I can tell that the sort of going Kennedy kind of bummed you out, and I understand why. And you know, all I can suggest is a nice soothing cup of freeze dried instant decaf, and you'll be all better. Or there's always queue up the film and start on viewing number two.
Yeah, that could be curative in its own right. But and now Punky's gone a little bit crazy. So yeah, let me chime off and let another person come in. But as always, it is great fun and quite satisfying to chat with you about such stuff.
It is, in fact, a blast. I enjoy it, Scott. You take care.
All right, Bob. Take care.
All right, later. Bye now.
See ya.
It's our buddy Scott and Punky from out in San Diego way. But you know that, right? And so there have been calls rolling in Scott's absence. And we'll see if we'll see what happens from there. Interesting historical comparison coming from our buddy James. Subject line: Amber Room, with a link to the Wikipedia entry on the Amber Room, curiously named. Which president does the Amber Room remind you of? Donald is the perfect fit for these assholes. He bought the trappings, including the golf commode, and then skipped on the payments. He was bailed out by those who understood the usefulness of an amber showroom. As they say, when you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with bullshit. And, of course, the Amber Room was originally built in Germany, and then it was disassembled piece by piece and shipped as a gift to the Tsar. And consequently, what James observes is very much the truth. He is the perfect fit for the people who bought and own him. Coup d'etat, says Mark, presumably in Florida. Coup d'etat, JFK, MLK, RFK. It feels that way sometimes. It does indeed. So we are at 19 minutes before the hour. We got $115 to finish in fundraising for the evening. It would be great to finish that off, because then, you know, just one more and done. One and done. Finish the 200 off tomorrow, and boom, everything after that is fundraising free radio, which gets me downright excited. Meanwhile, over there on the phone line is John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How you doing today, man?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. Just getting back from band practice and everything, so, you know, it always puts me in a pretty good mood. So.
You guys are you guys rocking?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep, we are, man. I thought I was having some issues earlier with my amp, you know, and it turns out that it was just my guitar is shitty. Like, recently I've been on this kick where I've been criticizing the shit out of guitar companies like Fender and Gibson. If you're familiar with them, they're American guitar companies, been around for a long, long time, especially Gibson. But I keep maintaining that they overcharge for their instruments, man. You got to pay like $1,500 just to get a half decent Gibson that barely stays in tune. And I was just we were pointing out earlier today that, like, I usually have my other guitar that I paid only $600 for, Ibanez, and it sounded like 10 times better than the guitar I paid twice the amount for, because Gibson are a bunch of crooks, and they just don't have – their stuff is just not good quality. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's kind of a political issue. I've posted about it on Facebook, and people jumped my shit about it because they'd rather defend a greedy corporation than, you know, a starving musician. But anyway, so can you hear me okay? Because I'm driving in it.
No, you sound great. And frankly, what's the difference between an American Fender and a Mexican Fender? What is it, 40 miles?
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. You're right. Good point about that. Because I guess they make it in Baja California for the Mexican-made one, and the other one's made in, San Diego. Scott might know about that. But
deep Southern California.
Okay. I have a Mexican-made Fender and an American-made one, and the American-made one some people will take issue with this statement. Because there is guys out there who prefer the Mexican-made ones. They think that they sound more gritty. But the Mexican-made ones are just a lot lower standard. They don't sound as good. They don't play as well. And they just not as good quality overall. And you've got to pay like I paid like $500 for my Mexican-made one, when really that thing should be like $2. But you know, it is what it is. But I have a Gibson SG, and that's the one I've been complaining about, because people are jumping the Gibson ship like crazy, man, like rats from a
well. You know Gibson got seriously busted for dirty dealings in their tone woods a few years back, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people, this one guy I know who's anti-Obama was bitching. He's like, well, it was the Obama administration, EPA, that ruined Gibson. It's like, well, I'm thinking to myself, well, if they would actually play, like, would obey the law, they wouldn't have to worry about that. But I did, that was, what, in 2013 or something?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, they're a bunch of freaking crooks, man. Like, PRS... Paul Reed Smith, they're based out of Baltimore. Now, they're expensive as hell, but those guitars are definitely worth the money. And
oh,
a PRS
is a beautiful, beautiful piece of well, craftsmanship.
It is craftsmanship.
Even the Chinese PRSs sound pretty damn good, and they will stay in tune.
Yes. Gibsons will not. There's people, players as big as Jimi Page, who has tried to lobby Gibson to change their headstocks because they don't stay in tune, and everybody complains about it. You know, there's even interviews from Randy Rhoads saying, telling somebody from Guitar World back in 1981, he said, they're asking him about his Gibson, and he goes, you know what, I don't really play my Gibson all that often because I can't keep it in tune, you know, and some things just don't change, you know. So, you know, a lot of people have been jumping.
Kind of tells you something about that endorsement label on the back of all those Kiss records back when I was a teenager. Kiss uses only Gibson guitars. Well, it explains.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a problem that transfers across from the SG to the Les Paul, whatever. I presume.
Right.
And whenever I hear SG, I think, oh yeah, the Les Paul too, that Les Paul turned down.
Yes. I prefer an SG. I've been playing them for.
Well, you've got the double cutaway, so you can really get a grip way the hell on up the neck.
Dude, that's exactly right. Nobody ever has suggested that. That's the exact freaking reason, too, Bob. Exact reason. Because I played a Les Paul because a brother guitarist in my one band has a Les Paul, and my string broke, and he had to give it to me. And I didn't like it. I could not, you know. I do a lot of soloing, and I couldn't do it with the Les Paul. But the Les Paul.
Yeah, you got to have the double cutaway if you want to get way up there at the notes that only dogs can hear.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, and that's why PRS, a lot of them are designed with a double cutaway for that reason. And, you know, that's the way that is. And yeah, but I have an SG, and I really like it, but I paid $1,300 for the damn thing brand new last summer. And, it's just, they're good. All right, don't get me wrong. All these guitars are great guitars. They're good guitars. I'll play Gibson over, you know, most other guitars. Well, when my argument is they're charging way too much money for this stuff, and I think it's ridiculous. And I almost want to start my own. If I was a luthier, I'd start my own company, and I would say, you know what, this guitar, I could probably sell it for $1,000. I'm going to sell this thing for $500, half of what I should be selling it for. You know.
Well, but that's what you've got to sort out in the American-made guitars, because what you're paying for is ostensibly American craftsmanship. But in order to know for sure that that's what you're paying for, you have to know what the luthiers are being paid. Okay? So you need to know.
That's true.
$10,000 on an American-made PRS dentist guitar, you know, because the only people who can afford them are dentists. Then how much of that 10K is going in the craftspeople's pockets?
Right. You don't know, you know.
Well, I mean, I know a guy. Now, I know a guy who's a luthier around here and a fine guitar player in his own right. And he told me that, no, no, that 10K is not going in the craftspeople's pockets. The biggest part of it's going into corporate. And it goes into marketing.
Yeah.
And it goes into branding.
Right.
So, you know, you can get a craft built, custom made, depending on who you're talking to. The guy I know makes mostly acoustics, and he uses some absolutely fascinating wood, like, you know, his grandmother's 150-year-old dining room table.
Nice.
You know,
Billy Gibbons.
Made out of wormy chestnut.
Damn, man. That guy right there, man, he's got it going on. That's the way you do it. Because the wood matters. Billy Gibbons and Dusty, whatever his name is, from ZZ Top, they went to Muddy Waters' house, old house that he, like, grew up in, and where he started playing guitar at. And it was dilapidated. And there was a large wooden post on the ground. And this story that he tells is just incredible. I mean, it blows my mind. And so they actually, it's owned by the Blues Museum, the house is. And they told Billy Gibbons and Dusty, whatever his name is, they told him that since they're, you know, from ZZ Top, you guys can have that wood. So what they did was they planed it down. They made some bodies and some necks out of it. They made a bass for Dusty and a guitar for Billy Gibbons. And they said the sound from that was absolutely incredible. They never, ever got a different type of tone from that on any other guitar, no matter how expensive or how rare. So those guitars are now in that same museum that owned Muddy Waters' house. I just thought that was a really fact. I mean, when he told that story, it was on Mark Maron's podcast, and it blew my mind. I mean, I just was really blown away by that. So,
well, I mean, there are some fascinating the woods. You know, like you say, the wood matters, and it all depends on who can get their hands on what. And a lot of these woods, like wormy chestnut. When this guy got his hands on some and started making guitars, yeah, that stuff doesn't grow anymore.
Oh yeah, yeah. You got to wait 100 or 200 or 300
years.
There's
no waiting. The chestnut blight.
What
wiped,
do you mean?
The chestnut blight wiped out the American chestnut.
Oh, so it's in extinct.
Well, what they'll do is they grow up. You know, the American forest at the time of colonization had American chestnut trees, you know, bigger around than two people could reach their arms.
Oh, all right.
And it was used prolifically. It's harder than hell. Building barns and building houses and cabins and whatnot, nothing better. I guess the blight doesn't, it's not so much an issue west of the Mississippi, but you never hear about it. You never hear about stuff being done with it. But I mean, there are other woods that are, this is fascinating, kind of nerdy, you know, whatever. But in the days of the coal boom, in Appalachia, the bosses would order their wives china, porcelain, and it would come from Japan.
Oh.
And it would come packed with these seed pods because it acted like packing peanuts. And so you throw the seed pods over the hill. Well, guess what? They grew. And the name of the tree, and you can look it up, and then you can find guitars that are made out of it, and it is beautiful wood. It has a grain you cannot believe. You have to see it to believe it. It's called the Royal Polonia.
Royal Polonia.
Polonia, P-O-L-O-N-I-A.
Polonia. Oh, okay, Polonia, okay.
And it's prized in Japan because parents have their daughters' hope chests built out of it. And just like,
how hard is it?
I was told that just like, you know, the zen of flower arranging and steel making and all those things that the Japanese turn into just magnificent arts, the same thing applies to Royal Polonia, and they can tell whether it was on the south side of a hill or the north side of the hill, how much sun it got, depending on how the grain is structured in the wood.
Jeez, man. What is crazy, man?
And it's beautiful. It grows in well-watered areas, and it took off like a house afire in Appalachia.
Nice, because of the coal industry, too, kind of, too.
Well, because this stuff was coming as packing material.
Oh, okay.
And I learned about all this. I learned about all of this because I ran into a guy one night at a restaurant that no longer exists. But he was a timber buyer, and he was acting on behalf of some Japanese timber buyers. With very explicit.
Oh, you're not talk about Carl Higbee now, are you? Because wasn't he into timber? But no, I'm just kidding.
No.
Sorry to interrupt.
You got the Carl Higbee story. You get a cowbell for that. But he was buying on behalf of Japanese interests who were looking for awesome Royal Polonia, and he was going farm to farm, property to property, and buying up Royal Polonias.
Nice.
And so
for him anyway.
Well, and apparently it's like, you know, it's got its own market price over there, just like, you know, poisonous fugu fish. Only thing is, this stuff won't kill you unless it falls on you. But I mean,
I've never heard of that.
We've run kind of far afield of the general question. But no, I did get a correction. Scott and Punky told me that Taylor is in the San Diego area, Fender's in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep.
And
yep,
Bill,
right.
And Bill and not too far from you, Bill in Allentown said, ask John what he thinks of the guitar company in the Lehigh Valley. I presume he's talking about Martin.
Yeah. I have a Martin that's made in Mexico, and it's good. I mean, I like it. I'd rather have an American-made one because you know very well that, like, American-made guitars, amps, all that kind of stuff are pretty much the best in the world. I mean, Ibanez makes a pretty nice Japanese Ibanez guitar, but it doesn't come close to the American-made guitars. I mean, in the world of guitar, no matter where you're at in the world, everybody knows American-made is the best. And that's where it kind of – I'm sorry to sound exceptionalistic, you know what I'm saying? But it is true. But all my beef is that they do not need to be selling that shit so high. I mean, if you go look online – and I know people who've told me recently, they saw my Facebook post, and they said, you're right, dude. You know, they're like, I never thought about it, but you're right. It is too expensive. And that's what my beef is, man. But they're all guilty of it. Every American corporation is guilty. A guitar corporation is guilty of it because they're an American corporation.
Oh, I misspelled it. In case you go looking for it, Ron and Raleigh sent me the correction. Royal Polonia is PAULOWNIA.
Okay. I'm sure the Google will correct it anyway.
Well, now Ron and Raleigh saved you the trouble.
Oh, okay, cool.
Part of it is paying the craftsman. Part of it is for the corporation, and the other part of it is to keep the hoi polloi from all having Martins or Gibsons or Paul Reed Smiths or Fenders.
But I want that though. I want people. I want
you don't
the
want no, no. Yeah,
have...
I know, but they don't want that. They don't. They want dentists buying their $10,000 guitars, not dental technicians.
Well, maybe I should start my own company. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, are you skilled in the luthier business?
No, that's the thing. I mean, I work in woodworking. You know what I mean? I do. So that has to, and I've been playing for 16 years, so I understand how it all works. But no, it's skill. It's a highly sought after or highly rare skill. So I'm saying more like hire my own luthier. You know, but
well, if you want, shoot me an email, and I'll see if I can figure out a way to. I mean, you can ask him what he charges for some of his stuff. I mean, he doesn't
okay.
give it away, but it's
right.
Not the same as going out. And I've seen showcases where he just filled the room with his work. And
right.
it's art, dude.
And
you heard Ferg play one night. He was at it with me, and he just, you know, really timidly walked up and said, can I play one? And the guy, sure, that's what they're for. And just hands him this handmade acoustic guitar, and Ferg sits down and starts playing, and tears came to his eyes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he said, you know, we've sat in the showrooms and stuff, and Ferg's played Taylors, and he's played Martins, and he's played Gibsons.
What kind does he have?
Well, nothing right now.
Oh, really?
I mean, he's got my beat up old acoustic right now.
I was going to ask, do you play too? It sounds like you know a hell of a lot about it. I didn't know you played.
I did years and years and years ago, and I set it down and never picked it back up because I could achieve some technical proficiency, and I could read music and stuff, but you know, I have a tin ear. I mean, I've got a pretty good ear for people's voices, but I can't. Yeah, you could play me a D7 minor depressed in underappreciated seventh, and I wouldn't know that from a. from an A augmented sustained superlative 12th. I wouldn't know.
I'm right there with you. Some of the stuff
I studied classical when I was a teenager, and you know, and
that's what I should have done.
You know, all that you know, finger picking, no picks, and holding, you know, and I tried to convey that to Ferg when we got started. He took some of it, the other part of it he threw out the window, and it works great for him, but he's the exact opposite of me. Can't read music. Ferg's got a little bit of a dyslexia going for him. Can't read music worth a shit.
I can't read it, man. I'm trying to learn it.
He can play anything he hears.
Yeah, exactly.
He always gets excited with every new Jason Isbell album. And, you know, a few weeks later, he's playing most of the songs on it.
Nice. Yeah, he's good, man. Yeah, tell him, never give up.
See, I'll give away one of the little secrets. I keep talking about things that I would like for this program to become. And if we ever move this thing to video, it's not a secret. I mean, come on. If we ever move this thing to video, I'm not going to be able to play music at the break or anything. So I've talked to Ferg about being the house band. So if we ever put together like a massive crowdfunding campaign to upgrade the phones and some video equipment, the video mixer, and you know, finally get the program off the grid like I've wanted to do for 13 freaking years. Well, part of that'll be it would be a good electric, a good steel string acoustic, and a nylon string cutaway acoustic, and like an electronic keyboard, and boom, house band.
There you go. I wish I could come down to West Virginia to do that with you.
Well, you know, maybe when folks pass, if we've got musicians passing through, you know, sit down and do that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But of course, that's another one of those things that's a million miles away. And holy shit, it's 4 minutes after nine, and I got to get out of here, John.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to keep you long. You know what? I called to talk about, you know, shutdown stuff and all this other stuff. But you know what? I'm glad we didn't talk about it.
You're a little bit at ease.
Sick of politics.
Well, I can tell you that that Dirty Donnie did sign the extension through February 8th, so we've got that.
Okay, well, you know, I didn't want to see the Democrats cave, but you know what? We can't let keep the government closed because other people will get hurt too.
They didn't cave.
So,
that's
the
thing. They didn't cave. It's only caving if they had some way of going forward with the government shut down that wasn't going to result in manifest harm to a lot of people, and more particularly to their own chances of taking back the fucking Congress. So, that.
I know, and the thing is, like, I just got an email from, I don't know how I'm on their list, from Justice Democrats complaining about how they caved, and then over the weekend,
they'll make a purple fortune out of it. Justice Democrats will rake it in with both fists.
Right, and it's these people
they will not win a single race. I don't know. Maybe they'll win.
No, probably not.
But probably not. And they'll and the Justice Democrats will laugh all the way to the bank. And
right.
and their disheartened followers will sit around going, "God damn it, goddamn neoliberal establishment shills ruining it. I'm going to stay home in November. Might as well have a Republican Congress."
Yep, exactly. Man, you can't please these people. You cannot. Honestly, we shouldn't even be looking for their votes. Just go after the people that aren't registered and shit like that. That's the votes that we need to be getting, not these people. These people are arsonists. They don't care about who wins. Unless it's their people, they have no idea how politics works. They know how policy works. I will give them that. They do understand policy, but they do not understand the way politics works. They just don't know. They're naive, and I'm really sick and tired of that kind of thing. You know, it really frustrates
Simon,
me so much when
Simon Simple and Simon Pure.
Exactly. Yep.
John, have a good night.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right, take care. Go tune your guitar.
All right.
See you, man. Bye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of the program. I didn't mean to shoot over, but I get involved in a good conversation, and I don't think I lose track of time. Happens. Thanks to Catherine and Jamie and Henry. Thank you very kindly for jumping in this evening. We've got $115, $315 tomorrow, and then we're done. We're fundraising free all the way to the end of the month. If we can do $315 between now and so, there we go. That being the case, I'll thank everyone. Thank you all for sharing your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank everyone who keeps the program going. I'll thank you one and all for just being part of this and making this community what it is. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Hey, thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for especially right now with the way the other website is, for maintaining an alternate and the alternate stream as well. Thank you to John Fox in Australia, who's actually working on the other website issue. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.